How you doing, everybody? I am so thankful to be online or live, I guess, again, with keeping it real with two L's, because our lessons learned will lessen your L's. And today I'm so thankful to have Pam Brooks Crump here with us, the project coordinator for Trauma-Informed Care and Recovery Community Organizations. Pam, how you doing?
I'm good, Jake. How are you? Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm doing really well. And then, so tell me a little bit about, real quick before we get into questions, your position and some of the stuff you're doing right now, because I think it's so important.
Okay. So about 3/4 of my time is with Trauma Informed Care Project. And this project is educating the workforce. So other CPSs, certified peer specialists of any variety. There's mental health, addictive diseases, youth, and parents. So bring all those in, and we have 6 more trainings this year. Unfortunately, because of budget cuts in Georgia, we are looking for funds other places. So if anybody hears this and wants to grant or connect me with a grant or,
why is trauma-informed care so important? Especially now.
Trauma, I believe, Jake, is the common denominator with mental health recovery, substance use recovery. The research shows 95% of us that are in recovery have had traumas.
I have. Yeah. So,
it's the common denominator. And if we don't look at the traumas, it's very hard to sustain wellness in recovery. So it's been super important for my healing. I can tell you that.
I believe it. And now you get to, spread this, this word and the pathway of healing, right? Another pathway of healing, because going down this, bringing up traumas, if you're not ready to bring them up, or if you're not in a supportive space or whatever it is, it can go both ways, right? It can be a breakthrough or it could break you down if you don't have the correct support. So I think it's just so important. These conversations need to be had, but they should be had with the right support, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that brings up something we talk about in the training, which is most people really do want to talk about these things, but what has happened is they have not been validated. They have not been believed. Just think about the room and the support rooms that I've been in. People are really dying to let out those secrets.
It's true.
So it's kind of like we've sort of been taught that, oh no, that's a bag of worms. Don't open Pandora's box.
Right.
But the thing is, if you are trauma, if you treat somebody with trust, building trust, and you give them a choice, you give them voice, and you treat them with respect, when they're ready to open, they will open.
They will.
Now we're not there. We're not there to be, you better tell me about every single thing, that obviously that's not it, but hey, I'm here.
Right.
I've been through stuff myself.
Right.
Let's sit down. What's happened? And the thing is, we talk about a paradigm shift. Instead of asking people what's wrong with you, mm-hmm. we say, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't look at people's behavior and go, wait, you're acting out. You're non-compliant, you're lazy, you're aggressive, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Feel how that feels in your body. Mm-hmm. What happened? And so I think, and if we need to refer people to a, someone that does specific trauma, trauma therapy is all great. There's great kinds.
Right.
But we can be there, as peers and as certified peers, family members, we can just be there, be open and respectful.
Right. And I think, like you said, being validated, being heard, it's so important to then, because to me, that's like a blanket of love in some way. You feel
exactly.
warm, you feel loved, and then you really can release it, right? Because you actually, you get to experience and feel a little, just a little bit of that love, you know, will open a little bit of a door
right.
for you to kind of run through and be able
and
to get through.
And what it comes through as is connection, mm-hmm. heart. If I'm really connecting, then we're going to feel that little bit of love. We're going to feel that connection. And it's like, I'm not alone.
Yep.
But, you know, the opposite has, you know, people have gone, you know, to get help, and people are like, what's wrong with you? Judgment, judgment, judgment. And so people are afraid to share because mm-hmm. they're not, oh, you know, sometimes. So, yeah,
it's all
great
in.
Work. Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, and so that causes mental health challenges and substance use disorder.
You gotta self-medicate and you snap and you spin out
because
no one around you understands you. So you just continuously feel lost and you isolate and continue a cycle of, you know, distancing yourself from people that don't understand you. Yeah, I think that's the mental health kind of component. And then people that have behavioral health or substance use, disorder, self-medicate. You know, there's pain in me. I don't know why. I don't know how to explain it. So I'm going to take this because I know it takes away the pain.
Exactly.
Right. And then to me, that is trauma-informed care is a part of a preventative measure that should be implemented everywhere. It should be implemented in every single middle school. In fact, potentially elementary school. To have these kids start talking about this, or at least young adults start talking about these feelings and unknown pains and all the rest of that, so that they don't, because they'll find a solution. I did, you know.
I did. Well, exactly. Yeah.
It was temporary, but I found that. But and that kind of bumps us right into recovery, which I'm going to get into the first questions. So there's five questions, and then immediately afterwards we'll get into the why of those five questions.
Okay.
And this isn't like rapid fire, even though my energy just kind of turned it into like rapid fire. Ready, five questions, let's go. No, so the first one.
You read my mind, that's funny.
Yeah, you kind of popped up a little bit. Yeah, I was like, oh, hey. Yeah, look at it, slow it down. But so who is Pam? Who is Pam before, and this is the before recovery.
Okay, so before recovery, you know, it was a mixed bag. You know, I had some successes, I had some failures, but I was being run by the traumas that I had in my life. Mm-hmm. I had been sexually molested by my grandfather, so, and nobody believed that, and we didn't talk about it, because you don't talk about that, right? And so what was me inside was trying to deal with life without a very basic trust in people, mm-hmm. trust in family, mm-hmm. trust in myself. I must have done something wrong because everybody loves this man, so it must have been me.
Right.
And then, so I started drinking and drugging at 12. Mm. 12 years old. 12 years old. Okay, got my first drink in a bar at 12.
What grade are we in at 12 o'clock? At 12.
What was that?
What grade are we in at 12?
Eighth.
Eighth grade. Okay.
Or
seventh or eighth grade. Yeah. Wow. All right. Yeah.
And so then by 14, I was full on. You know, I mean, I was smoking weed. I was doing other drugs. I was drinking alcohol. It was like a 4-day party week. And then I would, we called it the party week. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
And then
recover.
Right. And then recover and try whatever. And, you know, I got through barely high school, and college and graduate school. Like I would somehow bring it in because in my family, it was like, you got to achieve, you got to achieve, you got to achieve, you got to achieve, got to achieve. And then I was combusting inward and outward, inward and outward. And it was, so that was me before.
That was you before. All right. I mean, and that makes sense. And I like kind of, you know, the description of combusting both inward and outward. It really kind of, illustrates the especially in mental health, you know, that pull of, you know, wanting to get be well and self-sabotaging back into sickness and then wanting to get well. I don't know. There's, you know, and doing right for yourself and then doing right for others. It all just seems very complicated when you're not informed or educated on what's happening in your mind.
Exactly.
So what was the first moment or series of moments you knew you needed support? So this is, now we're getting into recovery. Like what's the, what are those moments?
Yeah. Right. So, when I was 30, I think around 32, my sister came to me and said, did this happen to you also? Mm. So my sister had been, had the same lived experience of being sexually molested by our grandfather, and we had never talked about it. Okay. So on that day, I did not stop doing drugs and alcohol, you know, yet, right. But I knew, I count that as when my recovery started, because I was no longer alone.
Yep.
I was no longer alone in the world with this secret. Hmm. So I knew that my soul knew, oh my gosh, I'm going to be okay. I mean, something, you know, and it took time. It took 5 years before I truly, at first I gave up drugs and then still had alcohol going. But then, you know, it's been 23 years now that I've been without any alcohol or drugs, and that my traumas don't control my life anymore. Right. You know, and it has been a process, of lots of group support, lots of, she would have been called a coach, you know, 23 years ago, a recovery coach, but we didn't have the certification until a few years after that, but she was a recovery coach, and right. she absolutely was like, she walked alongside me. She led me. I mean, one day, literally, I just needed to be held. She held me in her lap, for 30 minutes while I sobbed.
Yep. And that's,
you know, she's like, what do you need?
Yeah.
What do you need? And there weren't the one rules that you can't touch or you can't do whatever. She just said, what do you need? And that is what I needed. And she helped me, you know, to figure out how to get rid of the anger that I felt. Mm. What are the goals? What is it for you, Pam, that would make your life better? What is a better life for you look like? I mean, I'm so grateful.
She just knew this, like in her heart.
Yeah, well, she had 10 years more in the program. She's got like 38 years now.
Okay.
And I have 58. But she had done her own work, you know, and she had alternative trainings, all kinds of different trainings.
Okay.
She wasn't a licensed counselor.
Right.
But she was a peer. She was a recovery coach. She really was.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah. And that's, you know, and then to play the game per se, you know, we need to get unified certifications and, you know, to be a certified peer, you know, specialist and to, you know, be able to help the, you know, the underserved or the majority of folks, whether it be in rural counties or, you know, cities, you know, as a CPS, a certified peer specialist, there's been people doing this forever. I mean, you know, whether it be, you know, the person sitting on the park bench, you know,
exactly.
I've heard stories about a woman that would always be on the park bench, you know, and people would come to the point where they, I think in a Nordic or Slavic country, they for mental health specifically put older, you know, women and men on park benches for people to go just talk to. That's it.
Exactly.
And it raised up their, you know, mental health. You know,
well, that's what we talk about that in trauma.
The wise ones.
Yeah, and we talk about this in trauma-informed care that the Aborigines, many tribes in Africa, they've been doing this. They understand that the connection and telling your stories is the way of healing. So that's exactly what, you know, you're talking about as well. Yep. Yeah, that's cool.
Can Celtic sages and all the rest of them, kind of fun. It does yeah. kind of lead into our history. So when was it? When did you decide, or when was what was that moment that you finally accepted help and decided to get into the work of recovery? Because it's work.
Yeah.
You know, it's work. Just so people know that it's a.
Well, you know, it definitely is. I mean, and
at least it was for me. I'll just say that it was for me. It was work for me.
I mean, it still is. I mean, yeah. So the moment was, you know, okay. So like I said, so I've got, you know, my sister came to me. I realized I'm not alone, and then I realized there's going to be some work here.
Yep.
You know, I am going to have to change the way I think about things. I'm going to have to change the way I treat people. I'm going to have to change the way I treat myself.
Right.
And learn how to live. Learn mm-hmm. how to live not based on a wounded child.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was living my life based on, you know, people have different ways that they deal with the loss of control, loss of power.
Yep.
I'm going to grab all the power. Okay.
Okay.
So what that means is
you're gonna take it.
I'm gonna take it.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna do that to me again.
No.
I'm gonna be the one doing stuff.
Exactly.
If it is stuff, it's yeah. not gonna be. You're not gonna do that to
right.
me. So I was
harden up.
Harden up. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and then other people like, you know, fall in and just like whatever. You yep. know, whatever. Like, I don't know for me, and I just was like the. You
right.
know.
Okay.
Fighting.
Right.
And. Neither works.
No, not
neither
for the long
works.
Run.
Not no. for the long run. I mean, and it was what I did to survive.
Exactly.
And so I had to learn a different way of living, and I learned so many tools from support groups and from a coach, and then you know, and I've been to. Like exercise really helps me for, you know, in nature. I was just last weekend with the Phoenix group and we did camping and we spread out.
Yep.
We socially distanced and camping and rafting. I can't say that we actually socially distanced on the rafting, but, you know, yeah, it was outdoors and
exactly.
beautiful. And yeah. beautiful. And that has been very, there's so many things that have been important to my recovery, family as well. But when I decided was somewhere in that, between 31 and like 35. It, once you're aware of something, it's hard to go back and do the same thing without going, no, I'm not alone anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister, my sister actually got in recovery a year before me.
Okay.
So she began to say, this is a family thing. You know, and actually this didn't really help.
Okay.
But what helped was that I saw her changing.
Yep.
Okay. And I saw her happy.
Yep.
And I saw her connected with people that got her. I was like, what?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And
being accountable and dependable to other people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so finally I just said, okay, I am really ready for a new life. And that I knew it could be different. You know, I saw it with her. I saw it was different. So I said, I want in now.
Oh, I like that. So my next question is, where did peers help you along your journey? Or where did peers help you along the journey? But I really want to hear about this one. I want to hear about this one woman, if you don't mind. I mean, we don't need to call
yeah.
her out. But what was the, how did you meet? Like literally, was it at a meeting? Was it uncomfortable? How did you first say your first hellos?
Okay, so... I actually stopped drinking on my own in January of that year.
Okay.
And I was raw. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so then, I called my sister and she said, look in the yellow pages. This was back before cell phones and there were pay phones and everything.
Yep,
and
she
said, look up this support group. And so I looked up the support group. They answered. They said, there's a clubhouse, right?
Yeah.
The lady said, I know where you are. I know where you're standing. I know where that telephone booth is.
Okay.
So turn around and walk two blocks and you will be, this was in Coronado, California. You will be at the Orange, I think it was the Orange Clubhouse or something, because it was on Orange Avenue, right?
Okay.
As soon as she said that, I dropped the phone, literally, and ran the other way, the opposite way.
They see me.
I was like, oh my God, you know? And so then it took me a couple more months. And then I would like go and look around there when I knew nobody was there, because there would be no cars and stuff.
Right.
And so then one day I was jogging at the beach, right? And I heard within, you jog into that meeting right now. Right now. You go to that club out right now. And I jogged in. I mean, I was like sweating.
Right. Yeah.
I jogged in and they were having a meeting. I mean, like I knew when the meetings were, you know, and so I had been for a few months, like, am I going to go? I'm going to go. And that morning I said, this is it. And so I got there and I was welcomed. And I actually, someone said, come back to this other meeting, 'cause it's a women's meeting. And so that was 3 days from that day. And I heard my story.
Nice.
I heard my story, and that, you know, somebody that had gotten through school, was a sort of a binge drinker, drugger. And, it was then I knew. And let me tell you this. So this woman I met who told her story, she says, she would call my phone and on the voicemail. This is when we had the old timey ones with the recordings.
It's like a tape.
You had to reverse and everything. She called and she goes, talking about love, Jake. She goes, hey, Pam, I am so glad that I met you. And I just wanted to tell you that I love you. Mm. I was like, what? I've never heard anything like that. Okay. And I thought it was just weird, but I saved that thing on my voicemail. And I went back time after time during the day. Pam, I just want to tell you, I love you. And speaking of that love is what, and the fact that I heard very similar story, to mine. And that was the moment. That call was the moment. And I saved that. I wish I had saved that machine and that
I did. Taking that tape with you. I know.
Everywhere I go, but I take it with me. Her name was Michelle F. And, nice. So from there, then I knew that it was okay. It was go time. And it was like, okay, we got a new way of living. And so I got on it.
Nice. Got to work. Well,
I got on it.
A shout out to Michelle F. Thank you for giving us Pam. What do we got? Okay. Last question. And then we'll get into the whys. So, and now I'm pumping you back up again. I don't know why I'm doing that, but it's all right. I'm slapping my hands, all the rest of that kind of stuff. How can peer support services help maintain you or your loved one's recovery? I guess it's kind of both, right? Because it's in the family, it's in my family as well. I got a bunch of people in recovery just the same. And I love bringing up your loved ones. And even the individuals that are in recovery together with their family, because I believe that's just a part of it. How can peer support services help maintain your and your loved ones' recovery?
I wouldn't be here without it. I would not be here without it. And it played from the very beginning. And it still to this day, I work for Georgia Mental Health Consumer Network. We are an organization of peers, certified peer specialists, and everybody has lived experience in mental health, substance use, or both. So I'm surrounded by peers. And right now we do it a lot on Zoom and whatnot.
Yep.
I am supported every day, by peers. My life would not be what it is. And so when I go through things, I can call my call or text or email my executive director. Right. Literally 10 people at work right now are in my network of peers supporting me.
That's amazing.
It is. Yes. I mean, it is, you know, when I went through, my father died last year, through all of this COVID stuff. And, you know, and I go to meetings. I mean, we have three meetings a day at Georgia Mental Health Consumer Network.
What time are they, real quick? I'm going to put it on the
They are at 10. 10 a.m. is the new normal, which is talk about what's going on with COVID or whatever.
Right.
1 o'clock is kind of a more alternative-y art of yoga, blah, you know, cooking, da 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 da.
Right.
And then 2:30 is either DTR or all recovery.
Nice.
Every single day.
Oh, that's and right. all y'all recovery. Or y'all recovery.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. See, they got it right with the marketing little terms here. Yeah, put the little spin on it. That's right.
So that you just go to our gmhcn.org main page, and on the main page it says there's this box, virtual meetings, click here.
Yep.
And then you scroll and you just can join right to Zoom. You don't have to do anything else. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. You know, and you know, so working at a recovery community organization myself, so at Recovery Resources of Atlanta Midtown, we have had to go virtual or go digital.
Right.
Some people don't like calling it virtual for some reason, right? Because it's not like some VR thing, whatever it is. I don't even know why I brought that up. I had an interesting back and forth with somebody about that, digital meetings or is it virtual meetings, whatever it is. We had to go offsite and continue to provide our services, and that happened right like mid to March to end of March,
right.
And it's been tough. I mean, you know, because the majority of the people that we serve are you know, underserved communities, majority minority, and then persons experiencing homelessness, right? So they need a phone.
Right.
You know, and I know you've gone through this and had conversations within your organization, because I have, and I've, you know, asked plenty of people outside of this just the same, you know, how do we do that? We went through, you know, reaching out to AT&T and Verizon, the major communication, you know, individuals, even some of the, you know, T-Mobile or the smart plans, and some of the plans you can pick up at Sam's, like minutes and stuff like that.
Right.
And that was one of the bigger things in terms of, you know, the virtual piece. And the only reason I'm even getting into this in terms of, you know, how to maintain is there needs to be a connection. But what inspires me the most about, you know, what you talked about in terms of peer support is it was a phone call. It was a voice message.
Yeah, that's true. Wow.
You know?
Wow.
It was a voice message, you know, that was that little bit of tipping, you know, to, you know, to get you into it. So it was just a phone call. It wasn't even a phone call, right?
Never even thought about that. Wow. How cool is that?
Right. And we have that, and we can reach out to people just simply through the phone. You know, a video is better simply because we get to see body language is everything, you know, or not everything, is a lot of communication, and that makes it nicer, you know. But in these times, and especially in times of crisis or whatever, I mean, all we need is a phone. It worked, you know. It worked.
Right.
And I'll tell you, when I first got into recovery, too, the most powerful conversations I've ever had, simply because nerves or fear, I guess you could call it, you know, in front of someone, you know, and I, you know, went through the same process of getting a sponsor and going through the program. And my support group was AA at the time. And that was sitting in the car next to people, like going through the steps or out in a park, you know, when people were walking by, or I was lucky enough to be in Southern California, like you said, like run along the beach. So we could be out on the beach or something like that. So it's like, come on, you know, let loose or whatever it is. I would freeze up. But on the phone, something happened where I felt a little bit more safe to open up. And a lot of the conversations that were powerful and brought me past. Now, I came with action afterwards. I had the phone call and then I talked about it, face to face, the next day or the following mm-hmm. morning at a meeting or something mm-hmm. like that. But the initial, kind of release of, these fears right. or vulnerabilities or something like that. And I don't know why I make that right. sound, but that's kind of how it feels for me where I'm like, I just got to get this out. It happened over the phone. And then mm-hmm. I got to back it up by showing it up and it was like less, I don't know, for me it was, so I find that so powerful, and I just want to drill that in to anybody listening, is that we have our phones and we are a phone call away. So if anything, do that. If you can't make a virtual meeting or a digital meeting or anything like that, because you can phone into some of these too, right?
Right. So yeah, absolutely. You can right. phone in and we have the warm line and I know that the council does too, but we have a warm line that's 365 days a year.
Yep.
24/7.
Right.
24/7.
Right. And that's something that even we need to promote more because we are available. But we don't have technically weekend hours, I guess,
right.
we may change right. that, but for right now we don't technically have that. And you know what, I will say this is that in these moments of crisis and everything else, self-care I think is extremely important. So working, having boundaries with your work and your self-life, whatever you want to call it, I think is good and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure.
We need to have resources like phone lines that are available 24/7 though.
24/7, it is. I want to give you the number.
Let's do it.
Warm line. I don't know why I can't seem to memorize this. 1-888. Where is it?
1-888.
I think it's. I'm so sorry.
No, you're good.
All right. 945-1414.
945-1514?
No, 1414.
1414.
Mm-hmm. 1-888-945-1414. And it's 24/7, 365 days a year. And you will be connected with a certified peer specialist. And, so nobody needs to be alone at any time, but I'm so glad you made that connection about my moment.
Yep.
Wow. That voicemail.
Yep.
That voicemail was when I knew that's the love that I needed. I'm not alone anymore. I'm ready.
Yep.
I'm ready now. That is cool.
That is. And I love, so these next questions are about the why, and I'm going to call for a moment. Okay. It's better to be able to cough when you're by yourself now. If you're out in public and you cough, I always get so nervous. I get so nervous. Yeah, I'm like, it's just a little itch. I'm like, it's okay.
All right.
We're okay. I got my mask on. I'm all right. But now you're coughing in your mask.
Yeah.
And then, have you had the coffee breath?
Oh, mask? Please.
Have you had that yet?
Yeah, I'll be.
That's the COVID. Yeah, we got
that's the COVID
gotta
be able to, days.
Yeah, you got to laugh. You gotta laugh. It's been a whirlwind, but I've had the coffee breath way too many times. So, okay. This one is, I'm calling it Five Alive. It's your why statements. So these are based kind of on, the first five questions, and we can do this where it's either a one word answer or like a sentence.
Okay.
If it feels good and you want to keep going, then we can do that too. But so Five Alive, your why statements, Pam Brooks Crump, I wrote that wrong. That's a shame. So the person who you became, why do you believe you are the person that you are today in recovery?
Peer support.
Awesome.
Yes.
Why do you believe life led you to that moment, of making the decision to get into recovery and be this person, be this Pam?
Because my soul knew that my secrets could also help others to find recovery.
I like that one. Why do you, Pam, why do you believe you made the decision to get well?
Because I was sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah. Okay.
I was sick and tired of it. Sick of it. I was really sick of it. It wasn't working anymore. And I knew that I could have a great life. I knew it. And I just knew it. Somewhere my soul deep knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that there was something brighter and bigger for you. Or yeah. I think I like brighter for you on the other side or wherever mm-hmm. you were going. Mm-hmm. So these next two questions are interesting. Why are peers so important to anyone's recovery journey? Why are peers so important to our recovery journey or anyone's?
Because we get one another. We understand. It doesn't have to be the exact experience, but we have been through hell and we know what it feels like. Mm-hmm. And it really goes for anything. It could be for, you know, if you had cancer, you know, if you have diabetes, you know what it feels like. If you have lost a child, right. you know Oof. What that thing feels like. And so that's why us with mental health challenges and substance use disorder, we know how that hell feels. And so we can be there without judgment, I think the connection without judgment is what is powerful. And if you've never experienced it, I can't speak to, cancer or having cancer or right. having lost a child, but I can speak to this. Right. And so there's an instant connection and
right.
there's an instant I'm not alone anymore.
And that will change your mental, health or whatever it is to allow you to get into action, right? There's barriers that stop you from getting well. I know that very well. And a lot of mine are my own self-talk,
Right.
And negative self-talk that'll stop me from doing something that I know is going to, help me to get well. And that didn't stop. I'll tell you that much. That kept going on for a little while, and I got to find new strategies and stuff like that. But I believe it's so important. When you have that little change, because then you're allowed to get into action. You allow yourself to get into action.
Right. I mean, and it's just like the oak tree started with the oak,
the seed, the acorn.
The seed, right? Yep. And so. And it takes time to spread all of those roots and grow up. And we, and it's, corny as it may sound, you need good dirt.
Right.
You need sunshine. You need the rain. You need, which is the support. You need right. all of that in order to blossom.
Right. Right. That is, you do 110%. And then we get the last one, which is, why is self-directed care and many pathways to recovery so important?
Because I call it my guidance. You could call it your intuition. You could call it Holy Spirit. You could call it Chi. You could call it whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But we have answers inside. We have our own answers. And, all alternatives are possible. There's many alternatives that are possible, but what is right for me?
Right.
So all alternatives are viable, is what I meant to say. All are viable,
yep.
but what is right for me? And so if you tell me that it has to be the way it was that it was for you, then I'm making you my guidance, my higher power, and what I don't want to create codependent relationships. Mm-mm. I want you to know how great you are yep. and that you are worthy of recovery and that you have the answers now. And for a while it's like, wait, no, I don't. I don't know, you know, right. And
so, my best thinking got me here. So,
right.
Yeah, right.
You
yeah.
know, so what we can do is don't give up and feel like people are not, don't know anything just because they've been in substance use disorder or mental health illness, you know?
Right. Yep.
So build it back up.
Right.
I'm here. I'm going to stand alongside. Let's see, what does it mean to you to have a good life? Right. What does that mean? And then just keep on when people are like, I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not resilient, going anywhere, you know?
Persistent. Yep. Stay
you know,
resilient, with, be persistent.
Because otherwise you create, I need you and right. I need you in order for me to get well.
Mm-mm.
Right.
Mm-mm.
And that's not what we're wanting to do. No, you know, it's
self-love. I think, you know, self-love, exactly. Self-care, you know, put your mask on first. I mean, how many, you know, adages exactly. and proverbs are there to, you know, if you don't know love or if you don't know how to love yourself, how can you love anybody else? You know, and I think a lot of that is, and what you're talking about too, is self-directed care in many pathways is that, you know, we need, it doesn't matter what it is, you know, we're all on a journey to wellness, right? So whatever it is to get to that wellness where I'm a good person to myself and to, you know, the people around me, then that's the pathway, right? You know,
exactly.
And I think it does break down to be that simple. And there's many different ways to get there, but I do believe that, you know, when you get pushed into a corner or when life happens, you know, life on life's terms, because life will happen, much like that tree that's growing, right?
Right.
I mean, out in California, we have wildfires, right?
Exactly.
You know, storms will come through in your life and will break things down, and you need to right. be able to unlearn, relearn, or rebuild, or you know, have a strong foundation or whatever it may be. You know, but I think whatever it is, when you are by yourself, you know, I have two glasses. I have coffee or I have booze or something like that. Which one am I going to choose?
Right.
I mean, I myself need to start this, you know, or not, you know, or continue on the path that I am. I believe that.
Right.
I do believe that. I do also do believe, you know, the science of addiction recovery or mm-hmm. SOAR or whatever it is. That,
yes.
That there
yeah.
are chemicals, you know, that are, you know, and there's a lot in the brain in terms of making our behavioral you know, actions and decisions, you know, however, that also can be unlearned and relearned and reinstated.
Right, right. Right. We talk about that in trauma-informed care too, and the ACE study, the adverse childhood experiences. I mean, there's brain science around all this.
Yes.
And, but you can create new pathways.
Yes.
New, yep. the brain is, I can't.
Oh, our bodies are brilliant.
Amazing. And so let me stay in with this body and not be dependent upon you to make me feel better, because otherwise it comes back to what you first were saying. It is out here. If I am looking out here to get well, to get feel better, mm-hmm. then I'm going to go to a drink, a person, sex,
yep.
Gambling, exercising too much, cutting.
Right.
I mean, you right. know, all kinds of self-harm, because I'm not okay with, okay, what do I need to do? I could. And another thing is being okay with not being okay for yep. a minute.
Yep.
And
that was a big
comfort,
one.
You
that
know,
was a big one. Even in
it's
even
a big
in
one.
Recent in May, you know, with COVID, with the unrest and my, I wasn't in a good routine for my anxiety, you know, and
yeah.
I was
yeah.
taking on too much information, trying to relearn our American history while dealing with
Me
the
too.
Unrest, while dealing with my own insecurities about health. You know, I would cough
right.
and be like, I have COVID, you know,
right.
Because I got the livery or something like that. I mean, it
right.
was consuming me.
Yeah.
And because I wasn't on a decent routine. And then I finally got right. back into meditation in the morning and listening to
yes.
music and
yes.
outside and you know, calling people
that are
going to talk
exactly.
to me just to talk to me, not to talk to me about current affairs or anything like that. Right.
Right.
You know,
right.
But it was, yeah, I mean, it does need to come from within.
Right.
I believe there's, and whatever you call it, that power
exactly.
does live within you. You do have a viable spirit in and of yourself,
exactly.
you know, to be able to get well. And Pam, thank you so much. This is my first one coming back.
Oh,
and we,
okay.
I think we about knocked out an hour. Look at that. That's amazing.
Yeah, that was quick and fun.
That was a ton of fun. And then, so, all right, I told you this. I was mentioning this in the beginning. We're going to try and we'll see if we can nail it on the first try or maybe the second. But we're going to say thank you and goodbye, everybody, to Miss Pam Brooks Crump. And then we're going to go through our little tagline at the end. So to everybody listening, this has been Pam, keeping it real.
we got
keeping it. Yeah, this is so we're gonna do. This has been keeping it real with two L's because our lessons.
No.
We'll try and say it together, but I'll say it real quick at the beginning. This has been keeping it real with two L's because our lessons learned will lessen your L's. Boom. That's it. All right, we'll try it again. Okay, ready? So Pam,
oh my God, you might have to put that in the chat.
I will. Oh no. Okay. All right. I gotta put it in the chat. No. Here, yeah. I'll share this one. No, we'll get it out. So Pam, this has been keeping it real.
With two L's.
Because our lessons learned will lessen your L's.
Our lessons learned will lessen your L's. Okay.
Yes, that's it.